walking toward the door. Come meet me at the bar and find out. Asshole, Ethan murmured. Cormac paused with his hand on the knob. He sucked in a breath, the powerful muscles of his back rippling. When he looked over his shoulder, the amusement and threats were gone. Beyond Sophie, beyond Emil, this world could be so much more. This world could be free. I don't understand why you wouldn't want that.
Hard to enjoy being free, Hunt countered darkly, if you're dead.
Cormac opened the door, stepping into the swirling shadows. I can think of no better reason to yield my life. Chapter 17.
Does anyone else feel like they're about to wake up from a bad dream?
Ethan's question echoed into the fraught silence of the apartment. Bryce checked the clock on her phone. Had it really been less than an hour since she'd walked down the teeming lunchtime streets with Rune? She rubbed idly at her star, still glowing faintly, and said to no one in particular,
I need to get back to the archives.
Rune exclaimed,
After all that, you're going back to work?
But she strode across the room, throwing Hunt a glance that had him following. He always got her like that. They didn't need Rune's fancy mind-speaking to communicate. She halted by the front door. None of Cormac's power lingered, not even a wisp of shadow, not one ember. For a heartbeat, she wished she had the serenity of Lahaba to return to, the serenity of the gallery and its quiet library. But those things were irrevocably gone. Bryce said as calmly as she could to the males watching her, schooling her face into neutrality, We just had a bomb dropped into our lives, a bomb that is now ticking away. I need to think, and I have a job that I'm contractually obligated to show up to. Where she could close her office door and figure out if she wanted to run like hell from that bomb or face its wrath. Hunt put a hand on her shoulder, but said nothing. He'd leapt in front of a bomb for her months ago, had shielded her body with his own against the brimstone missile. There was nothing he could do to shield her from this, though. Bryce couldn't bear to see the worry and dread she knew would be etched on his face. He knew what they were walking into, the enemy and odds they faced. She pivoted to Therian instead.
What do you want to do, Therian?
Not because the River Queen is pulling your puppet strings. What do you want?
This apartment, for starters, Therian said, leaning his head back against the cushions, muscled chest expanding as he heaved a breath. I want to find answers. Regardless of my orders, I want the truth of what I am facing, the enemy at my front as well as my back.
But I'm inclined to believe Cormac. He didn't display any signs of lying.
Trust me, Rune growled. He's more skilled than you know.
I don't think he was lying either, Hunt admitted.
Bryce rubbed at her neck, then straightened. Any chance that Dusk's truth is somehow related to the Lightfall Squadron? Therian arched a brow.
Why?
Hunt picked up her thread immediately.
Lightfall, also known as Dusk.
And Project Thur, Thunder God. Could it be related to the Thunderbirds? Bryce went on.
You think it involved some kind of intel about Pippa's Lightfall Squadron?
Rune asked.
It seemed to be some sort of groundbreaking info, Therian said.
And Thur, it could have had something to do with the Thunderbird stuff. Sophie sounded afraid of the Asteri's wrath in her reply to Danica.
Maybe it was because she was afraid of them knowing she had the gift.
These are all hypotheticals, Hunt said, and big stretches. But they might lead somewhere. Sophie and Danica were certainly well aware of the threats posed by both Lightfall and the Asteri.
Ethan said, Can we go back to how the Prince of the Chasm was sitting on my lap?
You've got a lot to catch up on,
Hunt said, chuckling darkly.
Be glad you weren't here for the first summoning.
Bryce elbowed him. I really do have to return to work. Rune asked,
You don't think we should go to the Bone Quarter to look for Emil and Sophie?
Bryce winced. I'm not going to the Bone Quarter to look for anyone, unless we're absolutely certain that they're there.
Agreed, Therian said. It's too dangerous to go on a whim. We'll keep investigating. Maybe Danica meant something else by weary souls.
Bryce nodded. None of us talks to anyone else. I think we all know we're going to be roasted on a spit if this leaks.
One word from Cormac, and we're dead, Rune said gravely.
One word from us, Hunt countered, and he's dead.
He jerked his chin at Bryce. She finally met his stare, finding only razor-sharp calculation there.
Grab a gun.
Bryce scowled. Absolutely not. She gestured to her tight dress. Where would I hide it?
Then take the sword.
He pointed to her bedroom hallway.
Use it as some sort of accessory. If anyone can pull it off, you can.
Bryce couldn't help her glance at Ethan. It gave away everything.
You never gave Danica's sword back after the attack this spring?
The wolf asked a shade quietly. Sabine can fight me for it, Bryce said, and ignored Hunt's order to take the blade from its resting place in her closet. Bryce twisted the knob. Let's take the day. Agree not to fuck each other over on this, pray Cormac isn't a lying sack of shit, and then reconvene tomorrow night.
Done, Therian said.
Bryce stepped into the hall, Hunt on her heels, and heard Ethan's sigh behind her.
This was not how I expected my day to go, the wolf muttered to Therian, before ratcheting up the volume on the TV.
Same, Bryce thought, and shut the door. Hunt's head spun as he and Bryce rode the elevator down to the apartment lobby. He'd been free for a few glorious months, only to wind up right back on the cusp of another rebellion. The same war, Adis had claimed, just by a different name with a different army. Hunt's hands slicked with sweat. He'd seen how this war turned out, felt its cost for centuries. He said to Bryce, unable to stop the trembling that now overtook him, the sense that the elevator walls were pushing in.
I don't know what to do.
She leaned against the rail.
Me neither.
They waited until they were out on the street, keeping their voices down, before Hunt continued, words falling out of his mouth.
This isn't something we can jump into for the hell of it.
He couldn't get a breath down.
I've seen wrecked mech suits with their human pilots hanging out of the cockpit, organs dangling. I've seen wolves as strong as Ethan ripped in two. I've seen angels decimate battlefields without setting foot on the ground.
He shuddered, picturing Bryce among all that.
Fuck.
She looped her arm through his, and he leaned into her warmth, finding himself frozen despite the hot day. This sounds more like spying than battle fighting or whatever.
I'd rather die on the battlefield than in one of the Hinds interrogation rooms. I'd rather you die on a battlefield than in her hands.
Hunt swallowed.
Sophie was lucky that the Hind dumped her and was done with it.
He halted at an alley, tugging Bryce into its shadows with him. He let himself look at her face, pale enough that her freckles stood out, eyes wide, scared. The scent hit him a moment later.
We were never going to be allowed to live like normal people, Bryce breathed,
and Hunt ran a hand through her hair, savoring the silken strands.
Trouble was always going to come find us.
He knew she was right. They weren't the sort of people who could live ordinary lives. Hunt fought past the shaking in his bones, the roaring in his mind. She lifted a hand, and her warm palm cupped his cheek. He leaned into her touch, reining in a purr as her thumb brushed over his cheekbone.
You really don't think Cormac is luring us into a trap,
with his claim that Sophie knew some vital intel, the bait being that Danica was involved in some way?
It's possible, Hunt admitted. But there was clearly a connection between Danica and Sophie. The emails prove it.
And Cormac seemed pretty damned shocked to learn that Sophie was potentially alive. I think he believed the intel on the Asteri had died with Sophie. I wouldn't blame him for wondering if it could be in play once more. You think there's any chance Sophie told Emile before they were separated?
Hunt shrugged. They were in Kavala together. She might have found an opportunity to tell him. And if he doesn't have the intel, and Sophie is alive, he might know where Sophie is headed right now. That makes Emile a pretty valuable asset for everyone.
Bryce began counting on her fingers. So we've got Ophion, Therian, and Cormac, all wanting to find him.
If you want to find him too, Bryce, then we need to navigate carefully. Consider if we really want to get involved at all.
Her mouth twisted to the side. If there's a chance that we could discover what Sophie knew, what Danica guessed, separate from Cormac, from this shit with that Pippa woman and whatever the River Queen wants, I think that intel is worth the risk.
But why? So we can keep the Asteri from fucking with us about Micah and Sandriel?
Yeah. When I met up with Fury this morning, she mentioned that Danica knew something dangerous about her. So Fury learned something big about Danica in return. Hunt didn't get the chance to ask what exactly that was before Bryce said, "Why not apply the same thinking to this? The Asteri know something dangerous about me, about you, that they'd killed two archangels. I want to even the playing field a bit." Hunt could have sworn her expression was one he'd glimpsed on the Autumn King's face as she went on. "So we'll learn something vital about them. We'll take steps to ensure that if they fuck with us, the information will leak to the broader world."
"This is a deadly game. I'm not convinced the Asteri will want to play."
"I know. But beyond that, Danica thought this intel might be important enough to send Sophie after it, to risk her life for it. If Sophie is dead, then someone else needs to secure that information."
"It's not your responsibility, Bryce."
"It is." He wasn't going to touch that one. Not yet.
"And what about the kid?"
"We find him too. I don't give a shit if he's powerful. He's a kid and he's caught up in this giant mess."
Her eyes softened and his heart with them.
Would Shahar have cared about the boy? Only in the way Ophion and the River Queen seemed to, as a weapon. Bryce asked, head tilting to the side, "And what about Cormac's talk of freeing the world from the Asteri? That doesn't hold any weight with you?"
"Of course it does."
He slid a hand over her waist, tugging her closer.
"A world without them, without the archangels and the hierarchies. I'd like to see that world one day. But..."
His throat dried up.
"But I don't want to live in that world if the risk of creating it means get it out. If it means that we might not make it to that world."
Her eyes softened once more, and her thumb stroked over his cheek again. "Same, Athalar." He huffed a laugh, bowing his head, but she lifted his chin with her other hand. His fingers tightened on her waist. Bryce's whiskey-colored eyes glowed in the muted light of the alley. "Well, since we're dabbling in some seriously dangerous shit, now's probably as good a time as any to admit. I don't want to wait until winter solstice."
"For what?"
Fuck, his voice had dropped an octave. "This," she murmured, and rose onto her toes to kiss him. Hunt met her halfway, unable to contain his groan as he hauled her against him, lips finding hers at the same moment their bodies touched.
He could have sworn the fucking world spun out from under him at the taste of her,
his head filled with fire and lightning and storms, and all he could think of was her mouth, her warm, luscious body, the aching of his cock pressing against his pants, pressing against her as her arms twined around his neck. He was going to kick that wolf out of the apartment immediately. Hunt twisted, pinning her against the wall, and her mouth opened wider on a gasp. He swept his tongue in, tasting the honeyed spice that was pure Bryce. She wrapped a leg around his waist, and Hunt took the invitation, hefting her thigh higher, pressing himself against her until they were both writhing. Anyone might walk by the alley and see them. Lunchtime workers were streaming past. All it would take was one peek down the alley into the dusty shadows, one photograph, and this whole thing, Hunt halted. One photo, and her engagement to Cormac would be off, along with the bargain Bryce had crafted with him. Bryce asked, panting hard,
"What's wrong?"
Words had become foreign. All thought had gone between his legs, between her legs. He swallowed hard, then gently backed away, trying to master his jagged breathing.
"You're engaged, technically. You have to keep up that ruse with Cormac, at least in public."
She straightened her dress and, shit, was that a lilac lace bra peeking out from the neckline? Why the fuck hadn't he explored that just now? Bryce peered down the alley, lips swollen from his kisses, and some feral part of him howled in satisfaction to see that he had done that. He had brought that flush to her cheeks and wine-rich scent of arousal to her. She was his. And he was hers. Utterly fucking hers.
"Are you suggesting we find a seedy motel instead?"
Her lips curved, and Hunt's cock throbbed at the sight, as if begging for her mouth to slide over him. He let out a strangled noise.
"I'm suggesting..."
Hell, what was he suggesting?
"I don't know."
He blew out a breath.
"You're sure you want to do this now?"
He gestured between them.
"I know emotions are high after what we've learned.
He couldn't look at her.
"Whatever you want, Quinlan. That's what I mean to say."
She was silent for a moment, then her hand slid over his chest, landing upon his heart.
"What do you want? Why is it only what I want?"
"Because you were the one who mentioned waiting until solstice."
"And?"
"And I want to make sure that you're fully on board with ending our agreement."
"All right. But I also want to know what you want, Hunt."
He met her golden stare.
"You know what I want."
He couldn't stop his voice from lowering again.
"I've never stopped wanting it. Wanting you. I thought it was obvious."
Her heart was thundering. He could hear it. He glanced down at her ample chest and beheld a faint glimmering.
"Your star.
Let's not even get started on this thing," she said, waving a hand at it. "Let's keep talking about how much you want me," she winked. Hunt slung an arm around her shoulders, steering her back toward the bustling avenue. He whispered in her ear,
"Why don't I just show you later?"
She laughed, the star's glow fading in the sunlight, as they emerged onto the baking streets, and she slipped on her sunglasses and hat.
"That's what I want, Hunt. That is definitely what I want."
Chapter 18. Ethan rubbed at his face. This day had gotten complicated.
"You look like you need a drink," Therian said as he strode to the apartment door.
Rune had left a moment ago. Ethan supposed he'd sit on his ass for a good few hours and contemplate the epic mess he'd somehow landed in the middle of, that Bryce seemed intent on involving herself in.
"How long have you guys been doing all this shit?"
"You know what happened during the summit, right? Demons wrecked the city, killed a lot of people. Two archangels died. Everyone knows that."
Therian's brows rose.
"You ever learn how Micah and Sandriel died?"
Ethan blinked, bracing himself. Therian's expression was dead serious.
"I am telling you this after I received a personal phone call from Rigelus 3 months ago, telling me to keep my mouth shut or I'd be killed, my parents with me. But as everything I'm doing these days seems to point toward that road anyway, you might as well know the truth too, since you'll likely wind up dead with us."
"Fantastic." Ethan wished Perry had dumped him anywhere but this apartment. Therian said,
"Hunt ripped Sandriel's head from her shoulders after the Archangel threatened Bryce."
Ethan started. He'd known Athalar was intense as shit, but killing an Archangel?
"And Bryce slaughtered Micah after he bragged about killing Danica and the pack of devils."
Ethan's body went numb. He couldn't get a breath down.
"Micah, what?"
By the time Therian finished explaining, Ethan was shaking.
"Why didn't she tell me?
The packless wolf inside him was howling with rage and pain. Fuck. Sabine had no idea Micah had killed her daughter. Or, wait, Sabine did know. Sabine and Amelie had both been at the summit, along with the Prime. They'd witnessed through the feeds what Therian had just described. And hadn't told him. The rest of the den, fine, but Connor was his brother. The urge to shift, to bellow and roar filled his blood, trembling along his bones. He suppressed it. Therian went on, unaware of the animal within trying to claw free. The Asteri have made it clear to Bryce and Athalar. One word to anyone and they're dead. The only reason they're not dead yet is because they've played nicely this summer. Claws appeared at Ethan's fingertips. Therian didn't fail to note them. Through a mouthful of lengthening fangs, Ethan growled, "Micah killed my brother, and Bryce killed Micah because of it." He couldn't wrap his mind around it, that Bryce, before the drop, had destroyed an archangel. It made no sense. He'd had the audacity, the ignorance, to question her love for Danica and Connor. His claws and fangs retracted, that wolf inside ceased baying. Ethan rubbed at his face again, shame an oily river through him that drowned the wolf inside his skin. "I need some time to process this." The wolf he used to be would have run to the sunball field to practice until he became nothing but breath and sweat and the thoughts sorted themselves out. But he hadn't set foot on one of those fields in 2 years. He wasn't going to start now. Therian headed for the door again. "I'm sure you do, but a word of advice. Don't take too long. Erd works in strange ways, and I don't think it was a coincidence that you were brought here right as this shit started. So I'm supposed to go along with it on some hunch that fate is nudging me?" "Maybe," the mayor answered. He shrugged his powerful shoulders, honed from a lifetime of swimming. "But whenever you're tired of sitting on the couch feeling sorry for yourself, come find me. I could use a wolf's sense of smell. For what?" Therian's face turned grave. "I need to find a meal before Pippa Spetsos, or Cormac." The mayor left him with that. For a long moment, Ethan sat in silence. Had Connor known anything about Danica's involvement with Sophie Renast? Had Sabine? He doubted it, but at least Bryce had been as much in the dark about this as he was. Bryce, who had used Danica's sword during the attack on this city and kept it ever since. Ethan glanced to the door. He moved before he could second-guess the wisdom and morality of it, going right to the coat closet. Umbrellas, boxes of crap, nothing. The linen closet and the laundry closet didn't reveal anything either. Which left? He winced as he entered her bedroom. He didn't know how he hadn't seen it the other night. Well, he'd been beaten to hell and back, so that was excuse enough. But the sword leaned against the chair beside her tall dresser, as if she'd left it there for decoration. Ethan's mouth dried out, but he stalked for the ancient blade. Gifted to Danica by the Prime, an act that had infuriated Sabine, who'd long expected to inherit the family weapon. He could still hear Sabine raging in the weeks after Danica's death, trying to find where Danica had left the sword. She'd practically torn that old apartment to pieces to find it. Ethan had thought it lost until he saw Bryce brandishing it this spring. Breath tight in his chest, Ethan picked up the blade. It was light, but perfectly balanced. He drew it from the sheath, the metal shining in the dim light. Damn, it was gorgeous. Simple, yet impeccably made. He blew out a long breath, chasing away the clinging cobwebs of memories. Danica carrying the sword everywhere, wielding it in practice, the blade somehow validation that even if Sabine sucked, with Danica, they had a bright future. With Danica, the wolves would become more. He couldn't help it. He took up a defensive stance and swung the blade. Yeah, it was perfect, a remarkable feat of craftsmanship. Ethan pivoted, feinting and then striking at an invisible opponent. Sabine would lose her shit if she knew he was messing around with the blade. Whatever. Ethan struck again at the shadows, shuddering at the beautiful song of the sword slicing through the air, and what the hell? He'd had a weird fucking morning. He needed to burn off some tension. Lunging and parrying, leaping and rolling, Ethan sparred against an invisible enemy. Maybe he'd gone crazy. Maybe this was what happened to wolves without a pack. The sword was an extension of his arm, he thought. He slid over the glass dining table, taking on 2, 3, 10 opponents. Holstrom blocks, Holstrom presses. Moving through the apartment, Ethan leapt up onto the coffee table in front of the sectional, wood shuddering beneath him, the narration loud and precise in his head. Holstrom delivers the killing blow. He swiped the sword down in a triumphant arc. The front door opened. Bryce stared at him, standing on the coffee table with Danica's sword.
I forgot my work ID, Bryce started, brows so high they seemed capable of touching her hairline.
Ethan prayed Solas would melt him into the floor and boil his blood into steam. It seemed the sun god was listening. The coffee table groaned, then cracked, and collapsed entirely beneath him. Ethan might have continued to lie there, hoping some reaper would come suck the soul from his body, had Bryce not rushed over. Not to him, not to help him up, but to investigate something just beyond his line of sight.
What the hell is this? She asked, kneeling.
Ethan managed to move his ass off the debris, lifting his head to see her crouching over a stack of papers.
Was there a drawer in the table?
No. There must have been a secret compartment. Bryce flicked splinters of wood from the half-scattered pile. This table was here when I moved in. All the furniture was Danica's. She lifted her gaze to him. Why would she hide her old college papers in here? Rune held the star sword to the grindstone. Black, iridescent sparks flew from the blade's edge. Behind him in the otherwise empty ox armory, Flynn and Declan cleaned their array of guns at a work table. He'd planned to meet them here this afternoon, had intended to hone the sword, clean and inspect his guns, and then cap the day off with a city head meeting to discuss the new archangel. A normal day, in other words, except for the colossal life-threatening shit that had just gone down. Incredibly, the Prince of the Chasm was the least of his problems. Out with it, Flynn said, without halting work on his handgun.
What?
Rune asked, pulling the blade away. Declan answered, whatever has kept you standing there in silence for 10 minutes, not even complaining about Flynn's shitty playlist. Asshole, Flynn said to Deck, nodding toward where his phone blasted heavy metal. This stuff is poetry. They've done studies where plants wither up and die when exposed to this music, Declan countered, which is precisely how I feel right now. Flynn chuckled. I'm guessing you're brooding about one of three things. Horrible daddy, baby sister, or pretty fiancé. None of them, dickhead, Rune said, slumping into the chair across the table from them. He glanced to the doors, listening. When he was assured no one occupied the hall beyond, he said, my lunch hour began with finding the Prince of the Chasm in feline form at Bryce's apartment, where he revealed that Cormac is an Ophian rebel, and it ended with learning that Cormac is on the hunt for a missing kid and the kid's spy sister, who happens to be Cormac's girlfriend. And he's basically threatened to tell my father about my mind-speaking gifts if I don't meet him at some bar to hear his pitch for how I can be of use to Ophian. His friends gaped. Declan said carefully, is everyone alive?
Yes,
Rune said, sighing.
I was sworn to secrecy, but...
So long as you didn't swear a blood oath, who cares? Flynn said, gun forgotten on the table beside him.
Trust me, Cormac tried. I refused.
Good, Deck said.
Tell us everything.
They were the only two people in the world Rune would trust with this knowledge. Bryce and Hunt would kick his ass for saying anything, but too fucking bad. They had each other to vent to. So Rune opened his mouth and explained.
And that's where I'm at, Rune finished, toying with the ring through his lip.
Flynn rubbed his hands together.
This should be exciting.
He was totally serious. Rune gawked at him. But Declan was eyeing him thoughtfully.
I once hacked into an Imperial military database and saw the uncensored footage from the battlefields and camps.
Even Flynn's smile vanished. Declan went on, red hair gleaming in the first lights.
It made me sick. I dreamed about it for weeks afterward. Why didn't you say anything?
Rune asked.
Because there was nothing to be done about it. It seemed that way, at least.
Declan nodded, as if to himself.
Whatever you need, I'm in.
That easy, huh? Rune said, brows lifting.
That easy,
Deck answered. Rune had to take a moment. He had no idea what god he'd pleased enough to warrant being blessed with such friends. They were more than friends. They were his brothers. Rune finally said hoarsely,
We get caught, and we're dead. Our family's with us.
He added to Deck.
And Mark.
Trust me, Mark would be the first one to say hell yes to this. He hates the Asteri.
Deck's smile turned subdued.
But, yeah, I think it's safer if he doesn't know.
He frowned at Flynn.
Can you keep quiet?
Flynn made an outraged sound.
You talk when you're wasted,
Rune chimed in. But he knew Flynn was a steel vault when he wanted to be. Declan's voice deepened into a ridiculous mockery of Flynn as he said,
Oh, sexy nymph rider, look at your boobs. They're so round. They remind me of these bombs the ox is hiding in their armory in case of...
That was not what fucking happened,
Flynn hissed. She was a reporter, first of all, and it was 20 years ago.
Rune cut him off before this could descend into further insanity.
I think you learned your lesson,
Flynn glowered.
So, what now? You're going to go meet Cormac and hear him out?
Rune blew out a breath and began cleaning the sword in earnest. Bryce was going to go ballistic.
I don't see how I have any other choice.
Chapter 19.
What the fuck is this?
Bryce whispered as she knelt in the ruins of her coffee table and leafed through the stack of papers that had apparently been hidden inside.
It's not only college papers,
Ethan said, fanning out the pages beside her.
These are documents and images of newspaper clippings.
He peered at them.
They all seem like they're regarding First Light's uses, mostly how it was made into weapons.
Bryce's hands shook. She sifted through a few academic articles, all full of redactions, theorizing on the origin of worlds and what the Asteri even were.
She never mentioned any of this, Bryce said.
Think this is what Sophie Renast discovered?
He asked.
Like, maybe Danica sniffed something out about the Asteri with her...
He trailed off, then added,
gifts?
Bryce lifted her gaze to his carefully neutral face as he tried to recover from a stumble.
You knew about her bloodhound gift?
Ethan shifted on his knees.
It wasn't ever talked about, but yeah, Connor and I knew.
Bryce flipped another page, tucking that factoid away.
Well, why would it even matter if Danica had sniffed out something regarding the Asteri? They're holy stars.
Beings that possessed the force of an entire star within them, unaging and undying. But as Bryce skimmed article after article, Ethan doing the same beside her, she began to see that they challenged that fact. She made herself keep breathing steadily. Danica had been a history major at CCU. None of this stuff was out of the ordinary, except that it had been hidden here. All we have as proof of their so-called sacred power is their word, Bryce read.
Who has ever seen such a star manifest itself? If they are stars from the heavens, then they are fallen stars. A chill ran down Bryce's spine, one hand drifting to her chest. She had a star within her. Well, starlight that manifested as a star-shaped thing, but what was the Asteri's power then? The sun was a star. Did they possess the power of an actual sun? If so, this rebellion was fucked. Maybe Danica had wondered about it and wanted Sophie to verify it somehow. Maybe that was what the intel was about, what Danica had suspected and dreaded and needed to officially confirm. There was no way to win. Ever. Bryce wished Hunt were here, but she didn't dare call him with this info. Though after what had happened between them in the alley during lunch, maybe it was good they weren't in close quarters. She didn't trust herself to keep her hands off him. Because, God's damn, that kiss. She hadn't hesitated, had seen Hunt, that usually unflappable exterior melting away, and she'd needed to kiss him. The problem was that now she needed more. It was unfortunate that Ethan was staying with her, and the kind of sex she planned to have with Hunt would rattle the walls. But Erd must have sent her back to the apartment just now. For this. She exhaled, ran a hand over the pages. The final papers in the pile made Bryce's breath catch.
What is it? Ethan asked.
Bryce shook her head, angling slightly away from him to read the text again. Dusk's truth. The same project that had been mentioned in the emails between Sophie and Danica, that Danica had said would be of interest to Sophie. Danica had been digging into it since college. Bryce inhaled and turned to the next page. It was completely blank, like Danica had never gotten to writing down any notes about it. Dusk's truth was one of the things that Danica mentioned to Sophie, Bryce said quietly. Dusk's truth and Project Thur.
What is it?
She shook her head again. I don't know, but there has to be a connection between all of it. She tossed the Dusk's Truth document back onto the pile. Ethan asked,
So, what now?
She sighed. I gotta get back to work. He arched a brow in question. Job, remember? She got to her feet. Maybe, find some place to hide this stuff, and don't play warrior hero anymore. I liked that coffee table. Ethan flushed.
I wasn't playing warrior hero, he muttered.
Bryce snickered and grabbed her ID from where she'd left it hanging beside the door. But then she sobered. You looked good wielding it, Ethan.
I was just screwing around.
His tone was tense enough that she didn't say anything more before leaving. Rune found Cormac at the pool hall in Fyro, losing to a satyr, an old rock song crackling from the jukebox on the other side of the concrete-lined space. Cormac said, focusing on his shot,
I'd never tell your father, by the way.
And yet, here I am, Rune said.
The satyr noted the expression on Rune's face and made himself scarce.
Seems like your threat worked.
Desperate times,
Cormac muttered. Rune grabbed the cue the satyr had discarded, eyeing the pool table. He spotted the satyr's next shot immediately and smirked.
He was probably going to kick your ass.
Cormac again assessed his shot.
I was letting him win.
It was the princely thing to do.
Balls cracked, and Rune chuckled as they scattered. None found a pocket.
Sure, Rune said, aligning the cue ball.
Two balls found their homes with a satisfying plink. Cormac swore softly.
I have a feeling this is more your element than mine.
Guilty.
You seem like a male who spends his time in places like this.
As opposed to
doing things.
I head up the ox. It's not like I squat and dives all day.
Rune looked pointedly around the bar.
That party suggested otherwise.
We like to enjoy ourselves here in sunny Lunathian.
Cormac snorted.
Apparently.
He watched Rune pocket another ball, then blow his second shot by an inch.
You have more piercings since the last time I saw you, and more ink. Things must be dull around here, if that's what you spend your time on.
All right, Rune said, leaning against his cue.
You're a brooding hero, and I'm a lazy asshole. Is that really how you want to start your pitch?
Cormac made his move, one of the balls finally sinking into a pocket. But his second shot missed, leaving the angle Rune needed completely open.
Hear me out, cousin. That's all I ask.
Fine. Rune took his shot.
Let's hear it.
His voice was barely more than a whisper. Cormac leaned against his cue and studied the empty bar before saying,
Sophie was in contact with our most vital spy in the rebellion, Agent Daybright.
Unease wended through Rune. He really, really didn't want to know this. Cormac went on.
Daybright has direct access to the Asteri. Ophion has long wondered whether Daybright is one of the Asteri themselves. Daybright and Sophie used codes on crystal-fueled radios to pass along messages. But with Sophie's disappearance, it's become too dangerous to keep using the old methods of communicating.
The fact that the Hind was able to be on the scene so quickly that night indicates that someone might have intercepted those messages and broken our codes.
We need someone who can mind-speak to be in direct contact with Agent Daybright.
And why the fuck would I ever agree to work with you?
Beyond the threat of Cormac telling his father about his talents. The mind-speaking was a rare gift of the Avalon Fae, inherited from his mother's bloodline, and had always come naturally to him. He'd been four the first time he'd done it. He'd asked his mother for a sandwich. She'd screamed when she'd heard him in her mind, and in that moment he'd known that the gift was something to hide, to keep secret. When she'd rubbed her head, clearly wondering if she'd imagined things, he'd kept quiet and made sure she had no reason to bring him to his father, who he knew, even then, would have questioned and examined him and never let him go. Rune hadn't made that mistake again. He wouldn't let his father control this piece of him, too. And even if Cormac had sworn he wouldn't reveal it, he'd be stupid to believe his cousin.
Because it's the right thing to do, Cormac said. I've seen those death camps, seen what's left of the people who survive, the children who survive. It can't be allowed to go on, Rune said.
The prison camps are nothing new. Why act now?
Because Daybright came along and started feeding us vital information that has led to successful strikes on supply lines, missions, encampments. Now that we have someone in the upper echelons of the Asteri's rule, it changes everything. The information Daybright would pass to you can save thousands of lives.
And take them, Rune said darkly. Did you tell Command about me?
No,
Cormac said earnestly. I only mentioned that I had a contact in Lunathian, who might be useful in re-establishing our connection with Daybright, and was sent here. Rune couldn't fault him for trying.
While he couldn't read thoughts or invade people's unguarded minds as some of his cousins could, he'd learned that he could talk to people on a sort of psychic bridge, as if his mind had formed it brick by brick between souls. It was perfect for a spy network.
But Rune asked, and it was coincidence that it happened to line up with Emil coming here too. A slight smile.
Two birds, one stone. I needed a reason to be here, to cover for my hunt for him.
Seeking out your gifts offered that to Ophion.
As does my engagement to your sister.
Rune frowned.
So, you're asking me to what? Help out this one time, or for the rest of my fucking life?
I'm asking you, Rune, to pick up where Sophie left off. How long you decide to work with us is up to you. But right now, Ophion is desperate for Daybright's information. People's lives depend on it. Daybright has alerted us three times now before an Imperial attack on one of our bases. Those warnings saved thousands of lives. We need you for the next few months, or at least until we've attained the intel that Sophie knew.
I don't see how I have any choice but to say yes.
I told you, I won't tell your father. I just needed to get you here, to get you to listen.
I wouldn't ask this of you unless it was necessary.
How'd you even get caught up in all this rebel business?
Cormac's life had been pretty cushy, as far as Rune could tell. But he supposed that to an outsider, his own life looked the same. Cormac weighed the cue in his hands.
It's a long story. I linked up with them about 4 years ago.
And what's your title with Ophion, exactly?
Field agent.
Technically, I'm a field commander of the Northwestern Pangeran spy network. He exhaled slowly.
Sophie was one of my agents.
But now you're trying to keep Emile away from Ophion? Having doubts about the cause?
Never about the cause, Cormac said quietly.
Only about the people in it. After the heavy hits to the bases this year, Ophion has about 10,000 members left, controlled by a team of 20 in command. Most of them are humans, but some are Vanir. Any Vanir affiliated with Ophion, command or not, are sworn to secrecy, perhaps to stricter standards than the humans.
Rune angled his head and asked baldly, How do you know you can trust me?
Because your sister put a bullet through the head of an archangel, and you've all kept quiet about it.
Rune nodded toward a pocket, but missed his final shot. Yet he said calmly,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Cormac laughed softly.
Really? My father's spies learned of it before the Asteri shut the information down.
Then why treat her like some party girl?
Because she went back to partying after what happened last spring.
So did I.
But they were getting off topic.
What do you know about Agent Daybright?
As much as you do.
Cormac's ball went wide by an embarrassing margin.
How do I make contact? And what's the process after I receive information?
You pass it to me.
I know where to send it in command.
And again, I'm supposed to simply trust you.
I've trusted you with information that could land me in the Asteri's cells.
Not just any prison. For this kind of thing, for someone of Cormac's rank, Rune's rank, it'd be the notorious dungeons beneath the Asteri's Crystal Palace. A place so awful, so brutal, that rumor claimed there were no cameras, no record, no proof of atrocities, except for rare witnesses and survivors like Athalar. Rune again lined up his final shot and called the pocket, but paused before making it.
So, how do I do it? Cast my mind into oblivion and hope someone answers?
Cormac chuckled, swearing again as Rune sank his last ball. Rune wordlessly grabbed the wooden triangle and began to re-rack the balls. Rune broke the balls with a thunderous crack, starting the next round. The 3 and 7 balls landed in opposite pockets, solids then. Cormac pulled a small quartz crystal from his pocket and tossed it to Rune.
It's all hypothetical right now, given that we've never worked with someone like you.
But first, try to contact Daybright by holding this. Daybright has the sister to this calm crystal. It possesses the same communicative properties as the gates in this city.
The calm crystal was warm against Rune's skin as he pocketed it.
How does it work?
That's how our radios reached Daybright. 7 crystals all hewn from one rock, 6 in radios in our possession, the 7th in Daybright's radio. They're beacons, on the same precise frequency, always desiring to connect into one whole again. This crystal is the last one that remains of our 6. The other 5 were destroyed for safety. I'm hoping that if someone with your powers holds it in your hand, it might link you with Daybright when you cast your mind out, the same way the gates here can send audio between them.
Cormac's gaze had gone hazy, pained, and Rune found himself asking,
Is this crystal from Sophie's radio?
Yes.
Cormac's voice thickened.
She gave it to command before she went into Kavala. They gave it to me, when I mentioned I might know someone who could use it.
Rune weighed the grief, the pain in his cousin's face before he softened his tone.
Sophie sounds like a remarkable person.
She was.
Is.
Cormac's throat bobbed.
I need to find her. And Emil.
You love her?
Cormac's eyes burned with flame. I don't try to delude myself into thinking that my father would ever approve of a union with a part human. Especially one with no fortune or name. But yes, I was hoping to find a way to spend my life with her.
You really think she's here, trying to meet up with Emil?
The mayor didn't rule it out. Why should I?
Again, those walls rose in Cormac's eyes.
If your sister knows anything about whether Danica found a hiding place for them, I need to know.
Rune noted the faint hint of desperation, of dread and panic, and decided to put his cousin out of his misery.
We suspect Danica might have told Sophie to lie low in the bone quarter, he said.
Alarm flared across Cormac's face, but he nodded his gratitude to Rune.
Then we will need to find a way to secure safe passage there, and find some way to search unseen and undisturbed.
Well, Rune needed a drink. Thank Erd they were already in a bar.
All right.
He surveyed his cousin, the perfect blonde hair and handsome face.
For what it's worth, if we can find Sophie, I think you should marry her, if she feels the same way about you. Don't let your father tie you into some betrothal you don't want.
Cormac didn't smile. He observed Rune with the same clear-eyed scrutiny and said,
The Witch Queen Hypaxia is beautiful and wise. You could do far worse, you know.
I know.
That was as much as Rune would say about it. She was beautiful. Stunningly, distractingly beautiful. But she had zero interest in him. She'd made that clear in the months after the summit. He didn't entirely blame her, even if he'd had a glimpse of what life might have been like with her, like peering through a keyhole.
Cormac cleared his throat.
When you connect with Daybright, say this to confirm your identity.
As his cousin rattled off the code phrases, Rune made shot after shot until only two balls remained, and he blew an easy one and scratched the cue ball to give his cousin a chance. He didn't know why he bothered. Cormac handed the cue ball back to him.
I don't want a pity win.
Rune rolled his eyes but took the ball back, making another shot.
Is there any intel I should be asking Daybright about?
For months now. We've been trying to coordinate a hit on the spine.
Daybright is our main source of information regarding when and where to strike.
The spine, the north-south railway that cut Pangaea in half, the main artery for supplies in this war.
Why risk the hit? Rune asked. To disrupt the supply lines?
That, and Daybright's been getting whispers for months now about the Asteri working on some sort of new mech suit prototype.
Different from the mech suits the humans use?
Yes. This is a mech suit designed for Vanir to pilot. For the Imperial armies.
Fuck. He could only imagine how dangerous they'd be.
Exactly, Cormac said. He checked his watch. I need to head toward the Black Dock. I want to know if there's any hint that Emil or Sophie have been there. But contact Daybright as soon as you can. We need to intercept the Vanir suit prototype to study its technology before it can be used to slaughter us.
Rune nodded, resigned.
All right. I'll help you. Your friends will not be pleased, Athalar in particular.
Leave Athalar to me.
He didn't answer to the angel, though his sister. Cormac observed him once more.
When you want out, I'll get you out. I promise.
Rune sank his last ball into his chosen pocket and leaned the stick against the concrete wall.
I'll hold you to that.
Chapter 20. The water dripping from Therian's wave skimmer onto the plastic floor of the dry dock in the blue court was the only sound as he repaired the vehicle. His sweat dripped along with it, despite the chamber's cool temperature. He'd stripped off his shirt within minutes of arriving here, even its soft cotton too confining against his skin as he worked. Reeds had gotten stuck in the engine during his trip out to the marshes the other day, and though the engineering team could have easily fixed the issue, he'd wanted to do it himself. Wanted to give his mind some time to sort everything out.
when he'd awoken that morning, talking to the Prince of the Chasm, pretending to be a cat for Erd's sake, hadn't been remotely near the list of possibilities for his day. Nor had finding out that an Avalon prince was an Ophian rebel searching for Sophie Renast's younger brother. Or that Danica Fendir had sent Sophie to gather some vital intel on the Asteri. No. He'd awoken with only one goal. Learn what Ethan Holstrom knew. A whole lot of nothing, apparently.
Some captain of intelligence. Captain whatever, Holstrom had called him.
Therian was half inclined to get it etched into a plaque for his desk. But at least Holstrom had agreed to help out should Therian need his nose to find the kid. If Pippa Spetsos was hunting for Emil, as Cormac had claimed, politics and Sophie and his queen aside, they needed to find the kid first, if only to spare him from being forced to use those Thunderbird powers in horrible ways. Holstrom would be a valuable asset in that endeavor. And besides, the wolf seemed like he needed something to do. The door to the dry dock room whooshed open, ushering in a scent of bubbling streams and water lilies. Therian kept his attention on the engine, the wrench clenched in his hand.
I heard you were here,
said a lilting female voice, and Therian plastered a smile on his face as he looked over his shoulder at the River Queen's daughter. She wore her usual diaphanous pale blue gown, offsetting the warm brown of her skin. River pearls and shards of abalone gleamed in her thick black curls, cascading well past her slim shoulders to the small of her back. She glided toward him on bare feet, the chill water coating the floor seemingly not bothering her at all. She always moved like that, as if she were floating underwater. She had no mare form, was only a fraction mare, actually. She was some kind of elemental humanoid, as at home in the open air as she was beneath the surface, part woman, part river. Therian held up his wrench, a strip of river weed tangled around the tip. Repairs.
Why do you still insist on doing them yourself?
Gives me a tangible task. He leaned against the wave skimmer on the lift behind him, the water beating its sides cool against his hot skin.
Is your work for my mother so unfulfilling that you need such things?
Therian offered a charming smile. I like to pretend I know what I'm doing around machines, he deflected. She gave him a light laugh in return, coming closer. Therian kept himself perfectly still, refusing to shy from the hand she laid on his bare chest.
I haven't seen much of you lately.
Your mother's been keeping me busy. Take it up with her. A small, shy smile.
I'd hoped we could.
She blushed, and Therian caught the meaning. They hadn't done that in years. Why now? Water spirits were capricious. He'd figured she'd gotten him, had him, lost interest, and moved on. Even if the vows between them still bound them together irreparably. Therian covered her small hand with his own, brushing his thumb over the velvety skin. It's late, and I have an early start.
And yet you're here, toiling on this machine.
She took after her mother when it came to technology, had barely mastered the concept of a computer despite lessons with Therian. He wondered if she even knew the name for the machine behind him.
I need it for tomorrow's work. A lie.
More than you need me?
Yes, definitely yes. But Therian gave another one of those grins.
Another time, I promise.
I heard you went into the city today.
I'm always in the city.
She eyed him, and he noted the jealous, wary gleam.
Who did you see?
Some friends.
Which ones?
How many interrogations had begun like this and ended in her crying to her mother? The last one had only been a few days ago. Afterward, he'd wound up on that boat in the Haldren Sea, hunting for Sophie Renast's remains. He said carefully, Bryce Quinlan, Rune Dannon, Ethan Holstrom, and Hunt Athalar. No need to mention Adis or Prince Cormac. They weren't his friends.
Bryce Quinlan, the girl from this spring, with the star?
He wasn't surprised she'd only asked about the female.
Yeah. Another wary look that Therian pretended not to notice as he said casually. She and Athalar are dating now, you know. A nice ending after everything that went down.
The River Queen's daughter relaxed visibly, shoulders slumping.
How sweet.
I'd like to introduce you sometime. A blatant lie.
I shall ask Mother,
he said. I'm going to see them again tomorrow. You could join me. It was reckless, but he'd spent 10 years now avoiding her, dodging the truth. Maybe they could change it up a bit.
Oh, Mother will need more time than that to prepare.
He bowed his head, the picture of understanding. Just let me know when. It'll be a double date.
What's that?
Television didn't exist down here, or at least in the River Queen's royal chambers. So popular culture, anything modern, they weren't even on her radar. Not that theirs could be considered a true betrothal. It was more like indentured servitude. Two couples going out to a meal together. You know, a date times two.
Ah.
A pretty smile.
I'd like that.
So would Athalar. Therian would never hear the end of it. He glanced at the clock. I do have an early start, and this engine is a mess. It was as close to a dismissal as he'd ever dare make. He did have a few rights. She could seek him out for sex, as she'd done, but he could say no without repercussions, and his duties as captain of intelligence were more important than seeing to her needs. He prayed she'd consider fixing a wave skimmer one of those duties. Oh, Janice be thanked, she did.
I'll leave you to it, then.
And then she was gone, the scent of water lilies with her. As the doors slid open to let her through, Therian glimpsed her four mare guards waiting on the other side. The River Queen's daughter never went anywhere alone. The broad-chested males would have fought to the death for the chance to share her bed. He knew they detested him for having and rejecting that access. He'd happily yield his position, if only the River Queen would let him. Alone again, Therian sighed, leaning his forehead against the wave skimmer. He didn't know how much more of this he could take. It could be weeks or years until she and her mother would start pushing for the wedding, and then for children, and he'd be locked in a cage here below the surface until even his Vanir life expired, old and dreamless and forgotten. A fate worse than death. But if this thing with Sophie and Emil Renast was indeed playing out in a big way, he'd use it as his temporary escape. He didn't give a shit about the rebellion, not really. But his queen had given him a task, so he'd milk this investigation for all it was worth. Perhaps see what the intel Sophie had gathered could gain him. Until his own stupid choices finally called in a debt.
And here's the common room,
Hunt said through his teeth to Baxian, as he shouldered open the door to the barracks hangout area.
As you already know. Always nice to hear from a local,
Baxian said, black wings folded in tightly as he noted the dim space, the little kitchenette to the left of the door, the sagging chairs and couches before the large TV, the door to the bathrooms straight ahead.
This is only for Triari.
All yours tonight, Hunt said, checking his phone. After 10. He'd been on his way out at 7 when Celestina had called, asking him to give Baxian a tour of the Comitium. Considering the sheer size of the place, it had taken this long. Especially because Baxian had oh so many questions. The bastard knew he was keeping Hunt here, away from Bryce and that sweet, sumptuous mouth, which was precisely why Hunt had opted to grin and bear it. He wouldn't give the shithead the satisfaction of knowing how much he was pissing him off, or turning his balls blue. But enough was enough, Hunt asked.
You need me to tuck you into bed, too.
Baxian snorted, going up to the fridge and yanking it open. The light bounced off his wings, silvering their arches.
You guys have crap beer. Government salary,
Hunt said, leaning against the doorway.
Menus for takeout are in the top drawer to your right, or you can call down to the canteen and see if they're still serving.
Good? Great. Bye.
What's that?
Baxian asked, and there was enough curiosity in his tone that Hunt didn't bite his head off. He followed the direction of the hellhound's gaze.
That's a TV. We watch stuff on it.
Baxian threw him a withering glare.
I know what a TV is, Athalar. I meant those wires and boxes beneath.
Hunt arched a brow.
That's an opticube.
Baxian stared at him blankly. Hunt tried again.
Gaming system?
The hellhound shook his head. For a moment, Hunt was standing in Baxian's place, assessing the same room, the same strange new tech, Isaiah and Justinian explaining what a fucking mobile phone was. Hunt said roughly,
You play games on it. Racing games, first-person games. Giant time suck, but fun.
Baxian looked like the word fun was foreign to him, too.
Soulless.
Sandriel hated technology, had refused to allow even televisions in her palace. Baxian might as well have been transported here from 3 centuries ago. Hunt himself had encountered tech in other parts of the world. But when most of his duties had kept him focused on Sandriel or her missions, he hadn't really had time to learn about everyday shit. From the hallway behind him, low voices murmured. Naomi and Pollux. Isaiah's soothing tones wove between them. Thank the gods. Hunt found Baxian observing him warily. He threw a flat stare back, one he'd perfected as the Umbra Mortis. Baxian just aimed for the hallway. Hunt gave him a wide berth. The hammer filled the doorway of Vic's room, talking to Isaiah and Naomi in the hall. It was Pollux's room now. Hunt's magic rumbled, lighting on the horizon. Pollux sneered at Hunt as he stalked past. Bags and boxes were piled high behind him, a miniature city dedicated to the hammer's vanity. Hunt, keenly aware of all the cameras, of Bryce's plea to behave, continued on, nodding at Naomi and Isaiah as he passed.
Well, here you go,
Hunt said to Baxian, pausing before Justinian's old room. Baxian opened the door. The room was as bare and empty as Hunt's had been. A duffel lay beside the narrow bed. All of Baxian's belongings fit in one fucking bag. It didn't make a difference. The hellhound was an asshole who had done shit that even Hunt couldn't stomach. For him to be in Justinian's room, filling his place, the crucifix in the lobby flashed in Hunt's mind, Justinian's agonized face as he hung on it. Hunt tried to banish the thought, but failed. He'd fucked up. Twice now he'd fucked up. First with the Fallen Rebellion, then this spring with the Viper Queen. And now? Was he really going to allow himself and Bryce to be dragged into something similar? How many people would be destroyed by the end? Baxian said, stepping into his room.
Thanks for the tour, Athalar.
Hunt again glimpsed that sad, empty little room behind the hellhound. Perhaps something like pity stirred him, because he said,
I'll give you a lesson on video games tomorrow. I gotta get home.
He could have sworn a shadow dimmed in Baxian's eyes that appeared a hell of a lot like longing.
Thanks,
Hunt grunted.
We'll link up after the morning check-in. You can shadow me for the day.
Real generous of you, Baxian said, and shut the door without further reply. Fortunately, Pollux shut his own door right then, slammed it in Naomi's face, leaving Hunt with his two friends. They headed for the common room without needing to say a word, waiting until they'd closed the door and ensured no one was in the bathroom, before sinking onto the couch. Hunt really wanted to go home, but...
So this fucking sucks,
he said quietly. Pollux should be drawn and quartered, Naomi spat.
I'm amazed you're both still alive, Isaiah said to her, propping his feet on the coffee table and loosening the gray tie around his neck.
Judging by the suit, he must have recently gotten in from escorting Celestina somewhere. But as your commander, I'm grateful you didn't brawl. He gave Hunt a pointed look. Hunt snorted, but Naomi said, The two of them defile those rooms by staying in there.
They're only rooms, Isaiah said, though pain tightened his face. All that Vic and Justinian were, it's not in there.
Yeah, it's in a box at the bottom of a trench, Naomi said, crossing her arms. And Justinian's ashes are on the wind.
So are Micah's,
Hunt said softly, and they looked at him. Hunt just shrugged. Were you really going to rebel this spring? Naomi asked. They hadn't once spoken about it these past months, the shit that had gone down.
Not by the end,
Hunt said.
I meant everything I said on the boat. I changed my mind. I realized that wasn't the path for me.
He met Isaiah's disapproving frown.
I still mean it.
He did. If Sophie and Emil and Ophion and Cormac and all that shit went away right now, he wouldn't fucking think twice about it, would be glad for it. But that wasn't how things were playing out. It wasn't how Bryce wanted it to play out. He could barely stand the sight of Isaiah's tattooed brow.
I know, Isaiah said at last.
You've got a lot more on the line now, he added, and Hunt wondered if he'd intended the slight tone of warning in the words. Wondered if Isaiah remembered how he and the other angels in the summit conference room had bowed to him after he'd ripped off Sandriel's head. What would his friends do if he told them about his recent contact with an Ophian rebel? His head spun. Hunt changed the subject, nodding to the hall behind the shut door.
You two going to stay here or find places of your own?
Oh, I'm out, Isaiah said, practically beaming. Signed a lease this morning on a place a few blocks from here. CBD, but closer to the old square.
Nice,
Hunt said, and lifted a brow at Naomi, who shook her head. Free rent, she said, despite the new hallmates. Pollux and Baxian would be staying here until Celestina deemed them well-adjusted enough to live in the city proper. Hunt shuddered to think of them loose.
Do you trust that they're going to behave?
He asked Isaiah,
because I fucking don't.
We don't have any choice but to trust that they will, Isaiah said, sighing.
And hope that the governor will see them for what they are.
Will it make any difference if she knows? Naomi asked, tucking her hands behind her head.
I guess we'll see,
Hunt said, and glanced at his phone again.
All right, I'm out.
He paused at the doorway, however. Looked at his two friends, wholly unaware of the shit that was coming their way. It'd be huge for either of them, potentially freeing for Isaiah, to bust Ophion, to capture Sophie Renast and her brother and haul in Cormac. If he spoke up now, spilled his guts, could he spare Bryce from the worst of it? Could he avoid crucifixion, avoid having an empty room being all that was left of him one day too? If he played it right, could he save them both, and maybe Rune and Ethan, and live to tell the tale? Therian was likely dead fucking meat for not telling the authorities about his mission, queen or no, as was the crown prince of Avalon. But, Isaiah asked, something on your mind? Hunt cleared his throat. The words sizzled on his tongue. A parachute, and now would be the exact moment to pull it open.
We have a major problem with rebels converging on this city, and I need your help to make sure they play right into our hands.
Hunt cleared his throat again, shook his head, and left. Chapter 21
Dusk's truth, huh?
Hunt's deep voice rumbled across the bed to Bryce as they lay in the darkness, Syrinx already snoring between them.
Danica definitely thought she was onto something, Bryce replied.
Hunt had missed dinner, leaving her to an unbearably awkward meal with Ethan. He'd been quiet and contemplative, wearing the game face she'd seen before big matches.
She'd said as much to him, but he hadn't wanted to talk. So Bryce had combed through Danica's papers and clippings again, had found nothing new. She'd only filled Hunt in when he'd finally gotten home from the committium and they'd readied for bed. Any thoughts of continuing what had gone down in that alley had vanished by the time she'd finished. Hunt hummed, shifting onto his side.
So you're really going to help Cormac, then?
It's not about wanting to help him. It's more about wanting to help Emil. But I meant what I said to you in the alley. This is also about getting what I can out of the situation for our own advantage. An end to the betrothal and some training. And, she admitted, learning about Danica.
Does it matter? About Danica, I mean?
It shouldn't, but it does. For some reason it does, she said carefully. I know we discussed this earlier, but I can't do this without you, Hunt. He said softly,
I know. I'm just... Fuck, Quinlan. The thought of anything happening to you scares the shit out of me. I understand, though. That's what prompted me this spring. What I was doing with Vic and Justinian. It was for Shahar.
Her heart strained.
I know.
And he'd been willing to give that up for her. For them.
So, you're in?
Yeah. Whatever help I can give, I'll offer it. But we need an exit strategy.
We do, she agreed. Let's talk about it tomorrow, though. I'm exhausted.
All right.
His wing brushed her bare shoulder, and she turned her head to find him with his head propped on a fist.
Don't do that.
What?
His eyes sparkled in the dimness. She turned onto her own side and waved a hand toward him.
Look so... like that.
His lips curled upward.
Sexy, attractive, seductive.
All of the above.
He flopped onto his back.
I feel weird doing anything with Holstrom a wall away.
She pointed to the aforementioned wall. He's on the other side of the apartment.
He's a wolf.
Bryce inhaled the musky midnight scent of him. Arousal. So, let's be quiet then. Hunt's swallow was audible.
All right, I'll be straight with you, Quinlan.
She arched a brow. He blew out a breath toward the ceiling.
It's been a while. For me, I mean.
Me too.
The longest she'd ever gone without sex since her first time at 17. Well, ignoring what she and Hunt had done on the couch months ago, though that wasn't the kind of sex she wanted right now. He said,
I guarantee that however long it's been for you, it's been longer for me.
How long?
Some part of her howled at the idea of anyone, any fucking one, putting their hands and mouth and other parts on him. Of Hunt touching anyone else, wanting anyone else. Of him existing in a world where he hadn't known her, and some other female had been more important. Some other female had been more important. Shahar. He'd loved her, been willing to die for her.
He nearly died for you, too,
a small voice whispered.
But this was different somehow.
Hunt grimaced.
6 months?
Bryce laughed. That's it? He growled.
It's a long time.
I thought you were going to say years. He gave her an affronted look.
I wasn't celibate, you know.
So who was the lucky lady then? Or male, she supposed. She'd assumed he preferred females, but it was entirely possible he also...
A nymph at a bar. She was from out of town and didn't recognize me.
Bryce's fingers curled, as if invisible claws appeared at their tips.
Nymph, huh?
Was that his type? Exactly like those dancers at the ballet, delicate and svelte? Had Shahar been like that? Bryce had never searched for portraits of the dead archangel, hadn't ever wanted to torture herself like that. But Sandriel had been beautiful as hell, slim and tall, and Hunt had once mentioned that they were twins. Bryce added, if only because she wanted him to feel a shred of the misery that now coursed through her.
Lion shifter, in a bathroom at the White Raven.
The night of the bombing?
The words were sharp, as if her fucking someone while they'd known each other was unacceptable. Less than a week before, she said nonchalantly, quietly pleased at his sharpness.
I thought you didn't like alpha holes.
I like them for some things.
Oh, yeah?
He trailed a finger down her bare arm.
What, exactly?
His voice dropped to a purr.
You don't seem to enjoy males bossing you around.
She couldn't help her blush. Every once in a while. It was all she could think to say as his fingers reached for her wrist, and he lifted her hand, bringing it to his mouth and pressing a kiss to her palm. This one was especially good at being in charge.
All right, Quinlan, he said against her skin. I'm thoroughly jealous.
She chuckled. So am I. He kissed the inside of her wrist, lips grazing over sensitive flesh.
Before we went off on this stupid tangent, I was trying to warn you that it's been a while, so I might...
Be fast? He nipped at her wrist.
Be loud, asshole.
She laughed, running her fingers over his smooth, unmarked brow. I could gag you. Hunt barked out a laugh.
Please tell me you're not into that.
She let out a,
For real?
He sat up slowly. She lay back against the pillows, arms behind her head. I'll try anything once. A muscle throbbed in his neck.
All right. But let's start with the basics. If that gets boring, I promise to find ways to keep you interested.
That doesn't get rid of the problem of Ethan's keen hearing. He shifted against the bed, and Bryce found the blatant evidence of his interest pushing against his tight boxer briefs. Soulless, he was huge. She laughed softly, sitting up as well. It really has been a while. He trembled, though with restraint.
Tell me yes, Bryce.
She went molten at the raw need in his words. I want to touch you first.
That's not a yes.
I want your yes.
Yes, fuck yes. Now your turn.
She only smirked, pressing a surprisingly steady hand to his bare, muscled chest. He allowed her to push him back against the pillows. I'll say yes when I've had my fill. Hunt let out a low, rough noise. Not too late for a gag, Bryce murmured, pressing a kiss to his chest. Hunt was going to burst out of his skin. He couldn't stand it, the sight of Bryce now straddling his thighs, wearing nothing but an old soft t-shirt, the silken glide of her hair over his bare chest as she pressed a kiss between his pecs, pressed another near his nipple. There was another person in this apartment, one with exceptional hearing, and he, Bryce's lips closed around his left nipple, wet heat sending Hunt's hips straining toward her.